Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Friday on a very interesting week in financial markets and then as well as historical with the passing of our Queen Elizabeth. So,
and Bob, you're actually writing an article about Queen Elizabeth?
Well, actually, yes, it includes her and other well-known kings in British history. About they had nicknames. I mean, Alfred the Great. Well, he earned the Great by, you know, strong battles against the Vikings back at the time. And then I stumbled on that in Europe, there were a couple of examples. One was Vlad the Impaler, and then there was a guy from Poland who was called Vladislaw the Elbow High. And then opposite to that was Edward the First, that was, because of his height, was called Longshanks. So, anyways, they had names through history. Harold the First was called Harefoot because of his speed and agility when hunting and things like that. So there were some, the dreadful King John. And, then there was Edward the Fourth, who was considered a very handsome. And when he kissed a widow for giving him more than expected, it is said she gave him more with hopes for another kiss. So there's some amusement back there. So we'll have the article finished, and if anybody is interested in it, you can get in touch with us at bobhoy.com or the other one. So timely and fun.
My late mother-in-law, who was in the RAF during the Second World War, was most impressed with the Queen because they were the same age. They both enlisted as enlisted persons in the armed forces. Queen Elizabeth, as Princess Elizabeth, was an enlisted mechanic and truck driver. That's why she enjoyed taking her Land Rover out all on her own.
Yeah.
Because if it broke down, she could repair it.
Yeah, no, and she was there as the Brits called it, a lorry driver, and then I think she became driving ambulances and things like that. So,
and I think she's the first person of royal heritage in British history who was not an officer in the armed forces. And I think she was quoted as saying, well, what do I know to command people?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
I think I need to learn stuff first.
Yeah.
So,
well, then there was recently Prince Harry.
Yeah.
Trained as a combat helicopter pilot and was actually serving in Afghanistan as Harry Wales. And then some British journalists cracked the story that it was actually the Prince of Wales. So they had to take him out of the combat zone, understandably.
Lots of history there.
A major moment in time.
Absolutely. So some of the headlines that caught your attention today, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Europe's commodity firms buckling under energy crisis.
Oh, it's just hell out there for energy prices, and built up over a long period of time. In the 1980s, President Reagan advised Europe not to rely upon energy pipelines from Russia, and then you had the central planners go to the conviction that there'd be milder winters, so you wouldn't need as much, and then they hated coal and natural gas and nuclear plants, so then they all went to interruptible devices, windmills and solar, which are intermittent. And even with electrical production from reliable and constant sources, there are times when the grid goes out of whack. Maybe a large demand in some place. And it's difficult to run even with consistent outputs. But then you got the Stanford windmills require wind, and sometimes they generate too much and disturb the grid. And then you got solar cells. And the problem with these things is that windmills and solar cells, it takes more energy to create them than the energy output over the lifetime design of whatever it is, a windmill or a solar cell. So it's absolutely illogical, impractical economics. And I think the disaster this winter in Europe and England for energy sources could be a moment of instruction to everybody.
Headline, California declares electrical grid emergency as blackouts increase due to their heat wave.
Oh, yeah. A few weeks ago, they wanted everybody to be driving electric cars by 2035 or something like that. And then they came out with a specific headline as, please don't plug in your electric car this afternoon. So it's madness, utter madness with power.
Now, California does have a lot of solar power. At some points during the day, 50% of their power does come from the sun. But again, and they also waste water, something fierce.
Oh, yeah, because they want to keep the minnows alive in the bay at San Francisco. And they will deny water to farmers in order to keep some sort of minnow alive in the estuary there. So, you know, it's a matter of priorities. Do you want food or do you want to look after minnows? No doubt. I think at some point food will become imperative.
The biggest wasters of water in California are apparently all the celebrities who can afford the fines they get for watering their lawns.
Oh, right. Yeah, I guess so, yeah. They live the good life.
Headline, Turkey's Erdogan says Europe is reaping what it sowed.
Oh, yeah. It's the same thing. Global warming, no need for as much power. And then against the best sources of power and very much for the worst sources of power. We mentioned it a few weeks ago, Jim, was stumbled on a chart of firewood, ordinary firewood in Germany. And I think it started about 2005, so it was up and down seasonally every year. And then at a tight range, like it wasn't going up. And then this year, woo, straight up, magnitudes of order, you know, never seen before. So, and then you've got the last week we talked about headlines about people in Poland lining up for days to buy coal for the household. So I think this winter, it could be very instructive politically to the control freaks who are insisting that impractical types of power be used.
So I guess for Christmas, mail your European relatives and friends a box of firewood.
Yeah.
We'll have more with Bob Hoy right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Bob, headline, Fed Chair Powell channeling his inner Volcker, shades of the inflation and the reaction to it back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Oh, yeah. The 1970s was a natural increase in commodity prices that goes with a long expansion. And then you have some wars, and then you have a big global bull market for commodities. And then that, of course, in each country, drives up the rate of consumer price inflation. So in the 1970s, I was very much aware, you know, in the investment business, and it was devastating because in such inflations, the cost of living always goes up faster than wages. And that then puts a lot of distress into ordinary folks, and that was the case. And so anyways, the whole of the establishment was laying the blame and discussing whether the rising inflation was due to wage push, like wages was putting inflation up, or cost pull, the costs were putting up. And when the whole story was just that the Fed had been depreciating the currency and had been so for decades, and then it culminated in that decade-long rise in commodity prices. So then the excruciating rise in interest rates, like the U.S. long bond, got up to 14%. And then if you go to the senior currency history, previously London and sterling, even in the most distressed conditions over 300 years, the highest yield for long-dated governments was 6.5%. So these guys, they got it up to 14%, 14% inflation and 14% yield on the long bond. So it was excruciating. So then Volcker, naturally, because rates were going up, he was raising the Fed rate and raising it quite aggressively because the T-bill rate was soaring. But then inflation broke. Commodities crashed, and the rate of inflation came down, and then Volcker then was celebrated, and still is, as having personally ended that inflation. And in order to get around that error, is you just go back to First World War, and global commodity prices went straight up to 1920, and the U.S. rate of inflation got to 24%. Now it's around 10%. And it crashed. The global commodities crashed. So that U.S. rate of inflation went to something like minus 14%. So then the Fed in the 1920s became riveted and horrified by the potential for deflation. So inflation wasn't high enough, so they were easy with the money supply. They were pouring fuel on the fires of financial speculation, not understanding what financial speculation can lead to. So the Fed was very easy with the money supply during the 1920s, and it was adding to the speculation. And then you had the 1929 bubble, and then, as usual, a very severe contraction followed. It was called the Great Depression. So here we are, most of the last decade, with commodity prices reaching a very, very impressive high twice, 2008-2011. Then about a decade later, you'd expect a great financial bubble to complete, and it has. But all the way through most of that decade, the Fed was telling us there was not enough inflation, and we have to provide the money supply. And then what happened, same thing. So here we are. But, you know, with the rate of inflation in 1920 getting up to 24%, you would think that the central bank at that time would be celebrated for bringing it down. But, hey, there's no measure. There's no mention in the literature of whoever was the head of the Fed in 1920. And of course you got the other issue is that if you looked at through 1980 when Volcker was supposed to have tightened, if you look at the M2 money supply growth figures, there was no dent in it. It just kept growing. So what happened is that the speculation in commodities and inflation crashed and it set up an era of inflation and financial assets. And I've said over the years that the recent years is that in some cases, like German bonds, which got to a negative yield, never in history. That was an example of hyperinflation in bond prices. And then with the huge market cap of the Bitcoin and crypto stuff, the percent gains were almost infinite on huge cap things. So, and that is an example of hyperinflation. So the issue is hyperinflation in financial assets, and it's beginning to unwind, and I think it'll eventually provide an instruction to all central bankers.
Headline, the Fed wants you fired.
Yeah. That's one way of looking at it. It's choking off, you know, mortgage rates going up, very painful. So it's part of the transition from boom to a contraction. But I like the irony in the headline is the Fed wants you fired.
Headline, rising mortgage rates, painful.
Oh, yeah. No, that is painful. And it hits ordinary folk who are not in a position to hedge themselves against such a rise. So, but you know, Jim, in looking over as much of the financial history as I have, you begin to understand that policymakers over the last century have essentially been control freaks. And, with the control of the Fed, it's been corrupted to essentially funding another experiment in unlimited government, particularly under the Biden administration, which is madder than Mad Hatters. But this is what they're doing. They're trying to fund an out-of-control expansion of government, which is a corruption. Sure, you may need a Federal Reserve, but you also want a disciplined Federal Reserve whereby the currency is convertible into a certain amount of gold, and that provides the discipline necessary to have reasonable central banking. But otherwise, without that, it's absolutely reckless central banking accompanying absolutely reckless speculation in the financial markets. Both are highly speculative. And we'll soon see just how damaging this can be.
Headline, China claims it only has 2.5% inflation. Can we believe that?
I don't think so. You know, like in U.S. and Canada, one of the very quickly expanding costs is the cost of government with taxation. But, man, that is not included in the calculation of the consumer price index. Oh no, you can't have the cost of government or taxation included in that. So, they're all crooked, you know, in the sense they're pushing an agenda that always transfers power to the state. And then more recently here with the, movement, and particularly in the United States, discovering that there's a whole body of people out there who are saying no to the extravagant ambition of the state. They're just going crazy. They're having, like, fits, tantrums that is normally only seen with four-year-olds. So we are in very wild politics. And, oh, here's a good theme for closing this out, Jim, that in past examples, the final thrust of expansion by ambitious governments, they find that even confiscatory taxation is not enough, so then they resort to depreciating the currency, inflation, and then that inflation with the extra currency and credit being forced into the marketplaces will go to where the public is speculating, and that has been financial assets. So when this crashes, it will definitely thwart the ambition or the ability of unrelenting government to fund themselves. So there you've had radical financial markets and radical political markets, and the ability to fund either is beginning to contract. So we live, as the Chinese say, in very interesting times.
Headline, World Economic Forum futurist says we don't need vast majority of the population.
Oh, yeah. Man, are they evil people. This goes back to Thomas Malthus in the late 1700s in England. He was a highly educated, you might call him an economist, thinker, philosopher. And he got the fear personally that the rate of population was growing faster than you could expand the rate of growing food. And he said that population was growing geometrically and food expansion was only growing arithmetically, so therefore there would be serious famines and starvations and stuff like that. And those days, upper classes, it was quite all right to consider that maybe allowing the lower classes to die off would be helpful. And indeed, there were some Malthusians in the British government bureaucracy in the 1840s when Ireland suffered that famine, and they said, oh, this is fine, we're getting rid of more people. That also appeared in the 1890s with a serious famine in India, and the British bureaucracy said, yes, this is a fine, it's getting rid of people. So this statement by the World Economic Forum is evil, but it's not new, and people would be best to ignore it.
Bob, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you, and look forward to next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy, the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. Find us on BitChute @TalkDigitalNetwork. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.